What did you do?
We'll go into that another day. Now let's talk of you. You are looking very well. Weren't you clever, dear, to survive?
I've a sorry tale to tell. I escaped more dead than alive.
Oh, my, where did you go?
Oh, I wandered to and fro.
I would torture, I would pay.
Holland, Portugal, and Spain. Holland, Portugal.
Amounts of universes by sensational. endless universes. There are endless amounts of universes beyond imagination. There are endless amounts of universes by sensation.
gently hold my hand, tell me gently where I stand, put all hostility aside. Touch me, me, touch me, me. I thought I felt you slip in the darkness where I lay, raising my securities, I cry. Touch me, me, touch me, me, touch me, me, touch me. It'll be right in a little while, when the night gets warmer and the fingers searching with the eyes of a little child. She treats me cold, cruel and violent, and I cry.
Tragedy of Woman's Emancipation. I begin with an admission. Regardless of all political and economic theories, treating of the fundamental differences between various groups within the human race, regardless of class and race distinctions, regardless of all artificial boundary lines between woman's rights and man's rights, I hold that there is a point where these differentiations may meet and grow into one perfect whole. With this, I do not mean to propose a peace treaty. The general social antagonism which has taken hold of our entire public life today, brought about through the force of opposing and contradictory interests, will crumble to pieces when the reorganization of our social life, based upon the principles of economic justice, shall have become a reality. Peace or harmony between the sexes and individuals does not necessarily depend on a superficial equalization of human beings, nor does it call for the elimination of individual traits and peculiarities. The problem that confronts us today, and which the nearest future is to solve, is how to be oneself, and yet in oneness with others, to feel deeply with all human beings and still retain one's own characteristic qualities. This seems to me to be the basis upon which the mass and the individual, the true democrat and the true individuality, man and woman, can meet without antagonism and opposition. The motto should not be, forgive one another, rather, understand one another. The oft-quoted sentence of Madame de Staël, to understand everything means to forgive everything, has never particularly appealed to me. It has the odor of the confessional. To forgive one's fellow being conveys the idea of pharisaical superiority. To understand one's fellow being suffices. The admission partly represents the fundamental aspect of my views on the emancipation of woman and its effect upon the entire sex. Emancipation should make it possible for woman to be human in the truest sense. Everything within her that craves assertion and activity should reach its fullest expression. All artificial barriers should be broken, and the road towards greater freedom cleared of every trace of centuries of submission and slavery. This was the original aim of the movement for women's emancipation, but the results so far achieved have isolated woman and have robbed her of the fountain springs of that happiness which is so essential to her. Merely external emancipation has made of the modern woman an artificial being, who reminds one of the products of French arboriculture with its arabesque trees and shrubs, pyramids, wheels, and wreaths. Anything except the forms which would be reached by the expression of her own inner qualities. Such artificially grown plants of the female sex are to be found in large numbers, especially in the so-called intellectual sphere of our life. Liberty and equality for women. What hopes and aspirations these words awakened when they were first uttered by some of the noblest and bravest souls of those days. The sun, in all his light and glory, was to rise upon a new world. In this world, woman was to be free to direct her own destiny. an aim certainly worthy of the great enthusiasm, courage, perseverance, and ceaseless effort of the tremendous host of pioneer men and women who staked everything against a world of prejudice and ignorance. My hopes also move towards that goal, but I hold that the emancipation of woman, as interpreted and practically applied today, has failed to reach that great end. Now woman is confronted with the necessity of emancipating herself from emancipation, if she really desires to be free. This may sound paradoxical, but is, nevertheless, only too true. What has she achieved through her emancipation? Equal suffrage in a few states. Has that purified our political life, as many well-meaning advocates predicted? Certainly not. Incidentally, it is really time that persons with plain, sound judgment should cease to talk about corruption in politics in a boarding school tone. Corruption of politics has nothing to do with the morals or the laxity of morals of various political personalities. Its cause is altogether a material one. Politics is the reflex of the business and industrial world, the mottos of which are, "To take is more blessed than to give. Buy cheap and sell dear. One soiled hand washes the other." There is no hope, even that woman, with her right to vote, will ever purify politics. Emancipation has brought woman economic equality with man. That is, she can choose her own profession and trade. But as her past and present physical training has not equipped her with the necessary strength to compete with man, she is often compelled to exhaust all her energy, use up her vitality, and strain every nerve in order to reach the market value. Very few ever succeed, for it is a fact that women teachers, doctors, lawyers, architects, and engineers are neither met with the same confidence as their male colleagues, nor receive equal remuneration. And those that do reach that enticing equality generally do so at the expense of their physical and psychical well-being. As to the great mass of working girls and women, how much independence is gained if the narrowness and lack of freedom of the home is exchanged for the narrowness and lack of freedom of the factory, sweatshop, department store, or office? In addition is the burden which is laid on many women of looking after a home sweet home, cold, dreary, disorderly, uninviting, after a day's hard work. Glorious independence! No wonder that hundreds of girls are so willing to accept the first offer of marriage, sick and tired of their independence behind the counter, at the sewing or typewriting machine. They are just ready to marry as girls of the middle class who long to throw off the yoke of parental supremacy. A so-called independence, which leads only to earning the merest subsistence, is not so enticing, not so ideal, that one could expect women to sacrifice everything for it. Our highly praised independence is, after all, but a slow process of dulling and stifling woman's nature, her love instinct, and her mother instinct. Nevertheless, the position of the working girl is far more natural and human than that of her seemingly more fortunate sister in the more cultured professional walks of life. Teachers, physicians, lawyers, engineers, etc., who have to make a dignified, proper appearance while the inner life is growing empty and dead. The narrowness of the existing conception of woman's independence and emancipation, the dread of love for a man who is not her social equal, the fear that love will rob her of her freedom and independence, the horror that love or the joy of motherhood will only hinder her in the full exercise of her profession, all these together make of the emancipated modern woman a compulsory vestal, before whom life, with its great clarifying sorrows and its deep entrancing joys, rolls on without touching or gripping her soul. Emancipation, as understood by the majority of its adherents and exponents, is of too narrow a scope to permit the boundless love and ecstasy contained in the deep emotion of the true woman, sweetheart, mother, in freedom. The tragedy of the self-purporting or economically free woman does not lie in too many, but in too few experiences. True, she surpasses her sister of past generations in knowledge of the world and human nature. It is just because of this that she feels deeply the lack of life's essence, which alone can enrich the human soul, and without which the majority of women have become mere professional automatons. That such a state of affairs was bound to come was foreseen by those who realized that, in the domain of ethics, there still remained many decaying ruins of the time of the undisputed superiority of man. Ruins that are still considered useful. And what is more important, a goodly number of the emancipated are unable to get along without them. Every movement that aims at the destruction of existing institutions and the replacement thereof with something more advanced, more perfect, has followers who, in theory, stand for the most radical ideas, but who, nevertheless, in their everyday practice, are like the average Philistine, feigning respectability and clamoring for the good opinion of their opponents. There are, for example, socialists, and even anarchists, who stand for the idea that property is robbery, yet who will grow indignant if anyone owe them the value of a half dozen pens. The same Philistine can be found in the movement for women's emancipation. Yellow journalists and milk and water literatures have painted pictures of the emancipated woman that make the hair of the good citizen and his dull companion stand up on end. Every member of the women's rights movement was pictured as a George Sand in her absolute disregard of morality. Nothing was sacred to her. She had no respect for the ideal relation between man and woman. In short, emancipation stood only for a reckless life of lust and sin, regardless of society, religion, and morality. The exponents of women's rights were highly indignant at such misrepresentation, and, lacking humor, they exerted all their energy to prove that they were not at all as bad as they were painted, but the very reverse. Of course, as long as woman was the slave of man, she could not be good and pure. But now that she was free and independent, she would prove how good she could be and that her influence would have a purifying effect on all institutions in society. True, the movement for women's rights has broken many old fetters, but it has also forged new ones. The great movement of true emancipation has not met with a great race of women who could look liberty in the face. Their narrow, puritanical vision banished man, as a disturber and doubtful character, out of their emotional life. Man was not to be tolerated at any price, except perhaps as the father of a child, since a child could not very well come to life without a father. Fortunately, the most rigid Puritans never will be strong enough to kill the innate craving for motherhood. But woman's freedom is closely aligned with man's freedom. And many of my so-called emancipated sisters seem to overlook the fact that a child born in freedom needs the love and devotion of each human being about him, man as well as woman. Unfortunately, it is this narrow conception of human relations that has brought about a great tragedy in the lives of the modern man and woman. About 15 years ago appeared a work from the pen of the brilliant Norwegian Laura Marholm called Woman, a Character Study. She was one of the first to call attention to the emptiness and narrowness of the existing conception of woman's emancipation and its tragic effect upon the inner life of woman. In her work, Laura Marholm speaks of the fate of several gifted women of international fame. The genius of Eleonora Duse, the great mathematician and writer Sonia Kovalevskaya, the artist and poet nature Marie Bashkirtseff, who died so young. Through each description of the lives of these women of such extraordinary mentality runs a marked trail of unsatisfied craving for a full, rounded, complete, and beautiful life, and the unrest and loneliness resulting from the lack of it. Through these masterly psychological sketches, one cannot help but see that the higher the mental development of woman, the less possible it is for her to meet a congenial mate who will see in her not only sex, but also the human being, the friend, the comrade, and strong individuality who cannot and ought not lose a single trait of her character. The average man, with his self-sufficiency, his ridiculously superior airs of patronage towards the female sex, is an impossibility for woman as depicted in the character study by Laura Marholm. Equally impossible for her is the man who can see in her nothing more than her mentality and her genius, and who fails to awaken her woman nature. A rich intellect and a fine soul are usually considered necessary attributes of a deep and beautiful personality. In the case of the modern woman, these attributes serve as a hindrance to the complete assertions of her being. For over 100 years, the old form of marriage, based on the Bible, till death doth part, has been denounced as an institution that stands for the sovereignty of the man over the woman, of her complete submission to his whims and commands, and absolute dependence on his name and support. Time and again, it has been conclusively proved that the old matrimonial relation restricted woman to the function of manservant and the bearer of his children. And yet we find many emancipated women who prefer marriage, with all its deficiencies, to the narrowness of an unmarried life, narrow and unendurable because of the chains of moral and social prejudice that cramp and bind her nature. The explanation of such inconsistency on the part of many advanced women is to be found in the fact that they never truly understood the meaning of emancipation. They thought that all that was needed was independence from external tyrannies. The internal tyrants, far more harmful to life and growth, ethical and social conventions, were left to take care of themselves. And they have taken care of themselves. They seem to get along as beautifully in the heads and hearts of the most active exponents of woman's emancipation as in the heads and hearts of our grandmothers. These internal tyrants, whether they be in the form of public opinion or what will mother say, or brother, father, aunt, or relative of any sort, what will Mrs. Grundy, Mr. Comstock, the employer, the Board of Education say? All these busybodies, moral detectives, jailers of the human spirit, what will they say? Until woman has learned to defy them all, to stand firmly on her own ground, and to insist upon her own unrestricted freedom, to listen to the voice of her nature, whether it call for life's greatest treasure, love for a man, or her most glorious privilege, the right to give birth to a child, she cannot call herself emancipated. How many emancipated women are brave enough to acknowledge that the voice of love is calling, wildly beating against their breasts, demanding to be heard, to be satisfied? The French writer Jean Rabrac, in one of his novels, New Beauty, attempts to picture the ideal, beautiful, emancipated woman. This ideal is embodied in a young girl, a physician. She talks very cleverly and wisely of how to feed infants. She is kind and administers medicines free to poor mothers. She converses with a young man of her acquaintance about the sanitary conditions of the future and how various bacilli and germs shall be exterminated by the use of stone walls and floors, and by the doing away with rugs and hangings. She is, of course, very plainly and practically dressed, mostly in black. The young man, who, at their first meeting, was overawed by the wisdom of his emancipated friend, gradually learns to understand her and recognizes one fine day that he loves her. They are young, and she is kind and beautiful, and though always in rigid attire, her appearance is softened by a spotlessly clean white collar and cuffs. One would expect that he would tell her of his love, but he is not one to commit romantic absurdities. Poetry and the enthusiasm of love cover their blushing faces before the pure beauty of the lady. He silences the voice of his nature and remains correct. She, too, is always exact, always rational, always well-behaved. I fear if they had formed a union, the young man would have risked freezing to death. I must confess that I can see nothing beautiful in this new beauty, which is as cold as the stone walls and floors she dreams of. Rather would I have the love songs of romantic ages, rather Don Juan and Madame Venus. Rather an elopement by ladder and rope on a moonlight night, followed by the father's curse, mother's moans, and the moral comments of neighbors, than the correctness and propriety measured by yardsticks. If love does not know how to give and take without restrictions, it is not love, but a transaction that never fails to lay stress on a plus and a minus. The greatest shortcoming of the emancipation of the present day lies in its artificial stiffness and its narrow respectabilities, which produce an emptiness in woman's soul that will not let her drink from the fountain of life. I once remarked that there seemed to be a deeper relationship between the old-fashioned mother and hostess, ever on the alert for the happiness of her little ones and the comfort of those she loved, and the truly new woman, than between the latter and her average emancipated sister. The disciples of emancipation, pure and simple, declared me a heathen, fit only for the stake. Their blind zeal did not let them see that my comparison between the old and the new was merely to prove that a goodly number of our grandmothers had more blood in their veins, far more humor and wit, and certainly a greater amount of naturalness, kind-heartedness, and simplicity than the majority of our emancipated professional women who fill the colleges, halls of learning, and various offices. This does not mean a wish to return to the past, nor does it condemn woman to her old sphere, the kitchen and the nursery. Salvation lies in an energetic march onward towards a brighter and clearer future. We are in need of unhampered growth out of old traditions and habits. The movement for woman's emancipation has so far made but the first step in that direction. It is to be hoped that it will gather strength to make another. The right to vote or equal civil rights may be good demands, but true emancipation begins neither at the polls nor in the courts. It begins in woman's soul. History tells us that every oppressed class gained true liberation from its masters through its own efforts. It is necessary that woman learn that lesson, that she realize that her freedom will reach as far as her power to achieve her freedom reaches. It is, therefore, far more important for her to begin with her inner regeneration, to cut loose from the weight of prejudices, traditions, and customs. The demand for equal rights in every vocation of life is just and fair. But after all, the most vital right is the right to love and to be loved. Indeed, if partial emancipation is to become a complete and true emancipation of woman, it will have to do away with the ridiculous notion that to be loved, to be sweetheart and mother, is synonymous with being slave or subordinate. It will have to do away with the absurd notion of the dualism of the sexes, or that man and woman represent two antagonistic worlds. Pettiness separates. Breadth unites. Let us be broad and big. Let us not overlook vital things because of the bulk of trifles confronting us. A true conception of the relation of the sexes will not admit of conqueror and conquered. It knows of but one great thing: to give of oneself boundlessly in order to find oneself richer, deeper, better. That alone can fill the emptiness and transform the tragedy of woman's emancipation into joy, limitless joy.
Det overrasker mig, hvor let det var at skrive sammen.
Ja.
Fordi det har jeg ikke rigtig gjort før på den måde. Men det fungerede bare.
Ja.
Super fint.
Forfatterskolen på Danmarks tur.
10 dage.
18 elever.
4 lærere.
1 bus.
1 buschauffør.
Per.
En flok heste på en eng.
En invitation til at lytte.
En række podcasts.
Produceret af eleverne selv.
Hovedveje og biveje. Skove og marker.
I de næste 27 minutter skal vi på besøg hos Odin Teatret i Holstebro, hvor Fie Martens Jungmann, mig selv, Eva Lange og Ursula Andkjær Olsen opfører en fælles tekst sammen med skuespilleren Iben Nahl Rasmussen.
Det trojanske føl. Hvem er jeg? Jeg trækkes på mine umodne hove ind gennem porten. Jeg er så udmattet. Det mest levende ved mig er ikke mig. Så udmattet er jeg.
Det mest levende ved mig
er
ikke
mig.
Så udmattet. Så udmattet er jeg.
Jeg står midt på torvet. Der blev jeg placeret. Jeg har aldrig ønsket at stå midt på torvet.
Jeg er så udmattet.
Jeg er så udmattet.
Hej Fie.
Hej.
Hej Ursula.
Altså, skal vi prøve at forklare lidt om, hvad det er, vi har forsøgt at gøre?
Ja.
Ja.
Vi tre har jo skrevet en tekst sammen, og det er jo noget, som vi ikke så tit gør, skriver fælles tekster. Men det var vildt sjovt.
Mm.
Ja, hvis vi skal ligesom komme mere ind på, hvad det var, det gik ud på, så er det jo det her med, at vi skal Danmark rundt med forfatterskolen, og vi skal til Odin Teatret, besøge Odin Teatret, og vi tænkte, at det var en virkelig, virkelig god mulighed for at gøre et eller andet med en tekst. Og så var det, vi har skrevet de her monologer, som vi tre har lavet sammen. Og så skal vi læse dem op sammen med Iben Nahl, som er en af de gamle Odin skuespillere. Fantastisk skuespiller. Helt vildt god stemme.
Og du skal også læse noget af det op, Fie. Det glæder jeg mig også ret meget til.
Jeps. Ja, og også dig, Ursula.
Ja, det er også mig. Ja, vi sidder i bussen. Vi er på vej mod Odin Teatret. Det her er forfatterskolens Danmark rundt tur. Det har allerede været en lang tur. Vi har været afsted mange dage. Nu kommer vi altså til Odin Teatret. Hvor vi skal se en forestilling, og vi skal arbejde med en tekst, som nogen af os har skrevet. Og være lidt i teaterets ja, omgivelser og liv. Det glæder vi os til. Vi er på Knudsens i Holstebro, hvor vi skal læse op sammen med Odin Teatrets husorkester og muligvis også nogle andre. Lige nu bliver der øvet.
Velkommen til denne sidste, meget særlige poesiaften på torsdag her inden sommeren. Vi føler det virkelig som et kæmpestort privilegium, at I fra forfatterskolen har været kommet herover og indvige os i jeres arbejde. Vi er virkelig meget spændte på at høre, hvad det er, I arbejder med. Vi er faktisk helt utroligt glade for, at I er kommet, og nu kan jeg røbe, at I kom i går, og vi har simpelthen nyt hver eneste sekund, vi har været sammen med jer.
Skal jeg starte?
Du starter bare, når du er klar.
Så jeg går tilbage til, jeg er så udmattet anden gang.
Præcis.
Ja. Jeg er så udmattet. Jeg står midt på torvet. Der blev jeg placeret. Jeg har aldrig ønsket at stå midt på torvet. Og selvom mit ansigt føles stift, jeg kan ikke bevæge det. Ikke rigtig udtrykke noget med det, tror jeg. Alligevel giver det ingen beskyttelse. Det, der er levende indeni. Jeg tror, det vil få mit stive ansigt til at krakelere. Midt på torvet. Plastikken. Måske bakelit. En forældet form for plastik. Helt sprød og mørnet. Vil krakelere midt på torvet. Og det, som egentlig ikke er mig. Men som er mig. Som skal skjules.
Som skal skjules.
Uønskede følelsesudtryk.
Vil myldre frem.
Som myrer.
Hvad hvis
jeg aldrig vokser ud af mig selv.
Aldrig. Hvis. Vokser ud af mig selv.
Jeg mener, ud af plastikken.
Ud af plastikken.
Og det, der før var mig, er bare en ham. Nu. Jeg er så udmattet. Jeg går snart i stykker.
Nu. Og nu.
Men.
Når jeg er så udmattet.
Og.
Jeg går snart i stykker.
Men. Og. Hvis.
Vandet.
Hvis. Nu. Og.
De synger.
Marseillaisen.
Over. Alt.
På to.
En soldat gik forbi lige før. For ulempede mig, sagde...
Hvem er du?
Eksotisk.
En gave.
Uforståelig.
Fuld af mystik.
Det sagde han. Jeg kæmpede med egne ben.
Væltede rundt.
På torvet. Smurt ind i...
Jeg ved ikke hvad.
Ønsket om...
Mening.
At udfolde et potentiale.
Hvis. Og.
Og nu.
Og nu.
Myrene.
Nu.
Mine øjne.
Nu.
Min stille, stående øjne.
Men.
Min stolthed, at jeg aldrig blinker. Stiger bare stift frem. Stiger bare stift frem. Mod højsiden.
Stiger bare stift frem.
Længere, hvad jeg kan leve som. Hvor længe skal jeg være nogens barn? Dage uden berøring. Blank stof, midtet af regn. I nat skal jeg sove i stallen. Jeg har været træt så længe. Jeg vil gerne savnes. Hjertet er et græs, og hesten er sulten. Ingen kan ride de blanke heste ud af mit bryst. Hvem er det, der bliver ved med at fodre hestene? De bliver så vilde. En mand fik hjælp til at skære sin hest op i små stykker. Jeg blev så ligeglad. Du findes ikke længere. Det er mørkt.
Vi startede med bare at sidde og... sådan, det ved jeg ikke, skar lidt ud og snak.
Ja.
Og så opstod der noget med det der trojanske føl.
Efter vi havde mødtes første gang, var vi jo ligesom bare endt ud med at have sådan nogle meget løse overemner.
Ja.
Eller hvad man kan kalde det. Men jeg kan ikke engang huske.
Det var nærmest nogle figurer, ikke?
Jo.
Nogle personer.
Ja. Jeg kan ikke huske, hvordan der var, det der føl blev til.
Nej, altså... Det, jo, det kan jeg, fordi det stammede fra dit plejehjem, havde jeg sagt, ikke?
Ja.
Altså, ikke dit plejehjem, men altså dit arbejdsplads.
Mit arbejde, ja.
Mm. Hvor at der stod, fik jeg at vide. Ja. Og det synes jeg er vigtigt for scenen, fordi man skal se det for sig. Der stod i sådan et eller andet korridorområde.
Ja, nede for enden af en gang.
Ja.
Var der ligesom bare blevet placeret det her træ.
Plastikføl. Nå, jeg opfattede, eller, det var i plastik. Jamen, det var har det, jeg set
det,
for mig.
Det tror jeg faktisk også, det var. Det lignede måske sådan en figur fra en karusel, som, altså, som bare
det
var
blevet... Det er jo simpelthen det,
placeret,
der er det afgørende.
Som tittede frem.
Ja.
Ja.
Blandt nogle andre ting. Altså møbler.
Rollator.
Og rollator,
ja.
Så stod det bare der.
Ja.
Ja, men det som var... Og så var det pludselig det der føl, ikke? Altså, jeg tror... at der skete det, vi bare tænkte over, hvad er der inde i det føl, ikke? Og ja. Måske, jeg kan ikke huske det, men jeg synes, at nogen, og jeg tror ikke, det var mig, men det kan selvfølgelig godt have været mig, man kan ikke udelukke det, men jeg synes, noget, I sagde noget med, at der boede nogle dyr inde i det, og så var det, at det der med det trojanske føl kom. Mm. Fordi, altså, den trojanske hest er jo også en hest, hvor der er noget inde i.
Ja, også fordi den var ligesom sådan placeret meget demonstrativt der, og alligevel skjult. Altså man tænkte, hvad laver den der?
Ja.
Hvad vil den?
Hvad er det, der skal ske?
Ja, hvad er det, der skal ske med den?
Det er et stort spørgsmål, ikke? Og hvad var meningen med den, ikke? Altså, og så var det, man så for sig, at den måske skulle bringe noget ind på det her plejehjem, ikke? Mm. Altså, og hvad det så kunne være. Mest oplagt var det myre.
Ja, og så har vi også, altså den der, den anden af monologerne har jo også lidt et...
Ja.
En heste, eller i hvert fald en hoppe og føl.
Det har den.
Tematik eller nogle nemlig. Figurer.
Måske er det det trojanske føls mor, ikke? Det er det, jeg ser for mig.
Ja. Ja.
Som bor i et stort slot.
Ja, så der er ligesom det beskidte slot og torvet som sådan hovedscenerne for de to tekster. Og så ud af de her scener opstår der ligesom også en slags, hvad siger man? Altså alt det her med skuespil, ikke? Og hvad skuespillere gør.
Ja, så torvet er jo også en slags scene, ikke?
Jo.
Så et offentligt rum.
Det er også det, altså det trojanske føl der. Var jo på plejehjemmet nærmest en rekvisit på en scene. Altså så hvis plejehjemmet var en scene, ikke? Og så var det også spændende, hvis den kunne træde ud af rollen som rekvisit og ligesom fortælle sin historie.
Ja. Præcis. Ja.
Eller forsøge at fortælle sin historie.
Ja.
Forstå, hvorfor at den stod der.
Mm. Blive vækket lidt til live på en eller anden måde.
Få sin egen stemme.
Mm.
Sine egne stemmer.
Ja, det giver mening, at det på en eller anden måde bliver et lille slags kor, der får lov om, eller der fremfører den.
Mm. Jeg synes, det gik overraskende, det ved jeg ikke, om vi behøver have med det her, men jeg synes det gik, altså det overraskede mig, hvor let det var at skrive sammen.
Ja.
Ja.
Fordi det har jeg ikke rigtig gjort før på den måde.
Ah.
Men det fungerede bare.
Ja.
Super fint.
Ja, det synes jeg også. Og det der med, at det ligesom bare dukkede op ind i det der Google Docs dokument, og til sidst blev det så vivlet sammen, at man... Altså, det er jo ikke var til at se, hvem der ligesom var afsender på det ene eller på det andet. Og det var også ligesom meningen.
Ja, nemlig, jeg synes også, det var helt vildt sjovt. Og det der, måske er det også, kan der ske lidt det der, man sådan tænker, nå, men det er så åbent sådan et felt, ikke? Så altså, selvfølgelig kan der måske ske det der med, at man ikke rigtig ved, hvad man overhovedet skal skrive, hvis man ikke rigtig ved, hvorfra man skriver. Men det kan også være helt vildt åbnende, ikke? At man tænker, nå, hvad som helst. Mm. Altså, og så kan man bare give den gas.
Mm. Ja, det var også som om, man blev mindre sådan, måske vurderende over for det, end man normalt ville gøre, hvis det bare var ens egen, fordi man var lidt sådan, nu kører jeg bare med på en eller anden, et eller andet flow. Eller sådan.
Ja, helt sikkert. Og det er noget af det vigtige, at kunne lige skippe det der vurderende en gang imellem. Ja. Ellers så kan man jo ikke få skrevet noget jo.
Nej.
Så,
ligesom bare lade sig føre med på en eller anden måde.
Ja, nemlig.
Kan jeg prøve en gang til?
Det var vildt fedt.
Ja, det var fedt. Du må gerne tage den en gang mere, hvis det er. Eller hvad tænker
den
du, Ursula?
Altså, den der, den går, altså, fordi det, der, nej, der ser ud som om...
Jeg står på stor afstand.
Men altså, ja, det hører jeg egentlig også med helt op til, der står monolog 2.
Okay, ja. Så fortsætter jeg derfra. Skal jeg gøre det,
ja,
i stedet for at starte forfra?
Ja,
så kommer vi igennem det i hvert fald.
Ja,
ja. Nemlig. Ja. 1, 2, jeg skulle have lavet. Ja. Jeg står på stor afstand af hvad? Jeg er så langt væk fra alting, alle. Måske er det snarere en enorm scene. Jeg taler med hele ansigtet for at være sikker på at nå ud over, ind over, at gøre sig forståelig helt indefra, indefra, hvor. Og så forstår man pludselig, her er en person,
person.
Væsen.
Noget, som taler for at
overbevise. Der er 4 vægge, ikke?
Der er nogle vægge. Noget at holde fast i.
Nu.
En,
så,
men, nej, 3, 4. 4 vægge, deromkring.
Nej,
måske 3. Godt.
Ikke.
Og så, nu, så hvis, et gulv. Hvis. Scenen. Nu. Så dejligt håndgribeligt et sted. Ikke? På en måde. At udfolde sit potentiale. Hvad står der i manuskriptet?
Nu.
Hvad som helst, mark my words, men okay, vi kunne sige, der stod rid dig selv i møde, eller fød dig selv føl. Man kan høre skuespilleren for sig viske under readingen.
What?
Måske de får brug for hjælp her. Skuespillere
kan også have brug for hjælp.
Selvom de tror, de kan spille sig ud af enhver situation.
Tag maske på.
Ja, lad som om de græder.
Eller grine.
Eller hvad fuck ved jeg. Vær nærværende. Hvad som helst.
Jo.
Ja, så meget ved jeg da om dem. Skuespillerne. Men altså
man kunne. Og hvem er jeg?
Spørg mig om alt. Ja, man kunne ringe efter en kongeskuespiller. Ture Lindhardt, one and only.
Ture!
Nu. Vi har brug for dig i boksen, kunne man sige. Så vil han komme med sin fortællende figur. Sende hænder ud i evigheden, når han fortæller om Jeppe på bjerget for 100.000. gang til et interesseret publikum.
Kæft, mand.
Må videre.
Hvis jeg kunne.
Tårne.
Jo,
Jeg overvældes.
Jeg stiger stift frem.
Freden. Jeg synes, at anden den.
Myrerne.
Endelig kommer de. Nu.
Nu vælger de ud af mig. Nu.
De vælger ud af mig. Indefra. Endelig.
Fedt,
kom der
myrerne. Ja. Myrerne kom ud på gang. Ej, hvor var det sjovt.
Ej, hvor er det gode.
Det blev sgu da ret sjovt. Det lød hver aften. Vi havde det sjovt.
Ja,
jeg
det
lød
det også.
Jeg
havde det sjovt.
Ja, godt.
Fedt.
Var det svært ikke at grine?
Ja, det var det. Det var også, når vi kom tæller på mig, så synes jeg, så
stod
det.
Ja.
Ja, klart.
Apagándola después. lagde mig i græsset. Råden er ikke en scene. Du kan ikke betrage mig her. Mor kom. Mor gik. Mor har spidset sko. Alt det, som kommer, kommer så tidligt, for at vise sig frem og gå igen. Jeg kender dig ikke. Du har aldrig været her. Jeg ved, du er her. Du må ikke gå frem.
Jeg forstår kun
lidt af, hvad du siger.
Der må stå et ubestemmeligt møbel med et hvidt klæde henover sig et eller andet sted herinde. Nogen eller noget hjalp mig hertil. Jeg er ikke kommet af mig selv. Måske bliver jeg ikke fundet.
Ikke fundet.
Jeg er gammel,
men er der overhovedet faldet nogen ind? Er jeg faktisk er ligeglad
med,
at
min krop søger nedad? Jeg er ligeglad.
Jeg er ligeglad.
Lad mig dog smuldre i fred.
Lad mig dog smuldre i fred.
Det er alle jer andre, som åbenbart ikke er ligeglade.
Jeg glemmer hver dag, at min krop falder ned.
Jeg har haft gang i vigtigere ting, såsom
at bære et barn i mine arme.
Jeg kunne give op lige nu. Jeg kunne ville ønske. Jeg kunne bygge et slot af mine mange nedadsøgende bryster. Og der er mange. Jeg vil invitere mig selv.
Mit barn skal lege.
Når der er aftensmad, er der så aftensmad, og det vil være trygt og godt. Mor og barn.
Hoppe og følge. Hoppe.
Det er nok for mig.
Græs. Det er nok for mig. Masser af blomster, et orangeskær, en underspillet duft af citrus.
Græs. Sådan fungerer det vel ikke?
Kunne man forestille sig noget meget småt
og blødt
at placere i hjertet?
At passe på sig selv, sin lille hjertet, spise aftensmad, mor og barn.
Hjertet.
Søg nedad mod det gode.
Mor og barn.
Græs.
Søg nedad
mod det gode.
Slot.
Bevar det, som det er. Ikke ændre på noget. Der skal ikke gøres rent i det her slot.
Der skal ikke gøres rent i vores slot.
Der skal ikke gøres rent i vores slot.
Det store, snavsede slot med mange værelser.
En stor, og jeg får lyst til at sige, overdådig trappe. Halvrådne frugtopsatser på hvert eneste trin.
Hoppe og følg små følfødder
på trappetrinene.
En stor, overdådig trappe. Halvrådne frugtopsatser på hvert eneste trin. Små følfødder på trappetrinene.